Thank you for listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast. This is episode 13-2, part 2.
I got your opinions right here.
So last week, I got in Project Crosszone. You guys heard of that one? No, Blue has.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Cross with an X?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
it's the 3DS game. It brings together characters from... Jeremy, why you gotta kill it?
I'm sorry. They stole it from the Cross Media Bar, though, I just have to say.
Sure, they did. Not like anime or manga or anything.
So anyway, this is the type of game that people always dream gets localized, but rarely does. And I put in about 10 hours or so, and I feel like I've only scratched the surface of things. So first, let me get the story out of the way.
Now, wait a minute. This is a slash fic... like dating sim?
No, there's no dating in it.
I just want to establish what kind of game this is.
Playing, no harems or anything. Well, there is a little...
Because I figure the cross is like, you know, so-and-so cross so-and-so, like Sonic cross Peach, right?
Mega Man cross blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, so there's this stolen stone, and which can manipulate time and space, and basically that's a ploy to get... 200 characters from what they say about 27 games, and it all is woven into this who's who tapestry of gaming. And don't ask me about, you know, every single character, because there's additions like the protagonist of it's either Shining Force, EXA, or Neo. I get the two confused. Those were the PS2 versions that have nothing to do with the previous Shining Force. A lot of obscure games that I probably haven't touched in almost a decade. Suffice to know that you won't and don't have to know every character to enjoy the plot line. The game references not only other games, but books, TV, films, politics. And the dialogue's playful, too. And it just, there's so much at you, it feels like, what was that parody game, Jeremy, for Vita and PS3?
Retro City Rampage.
It just throws stuff at you at that speed. And what really does work is how the characters act towards each other. The Valkyrie from Tales of Destiny and Fantasia. Knows and acts humbly in front of ghouls and ghosts, Sir Arthur. Chun-Li is familiar with Frank West's photojournalism, knows Chris Redfield and Jill Valentine. Even though these are all Capcom properties that are all Capcom, they're bound together. In a way, it just makes sense. And little things like the way Dante and Dimitri make this awkward kind of squabbling pair is sure to charm a lot of people. And when it comes to combat, Project Crosszone, I think it's really interesting. The game forsakes difficulty levels. It allows for as much intricacy and strategic menu fiddling as players are comfortable with. So fights, they task players with a couple of combos that are activated by a press of the circle pad and a button. And during these, players can have an assist jump in, which feels like a tag team fighter, and if a friendly unit is close by, they can call them in. And so combat is about juggling enemies, stringing together attacks for maximum damage in some of the best kind of role-playing eye candy, I think, that the 3DS has seen. Foes kind of, they bobble and spin around, and with damage numbers just kind of flying off them like sparks. And damage is well thought out. Players don't have to watch, you know, enemies retaliate and do the same thing. Instead, you spend points to either guard, counter, fully guard, or even accept the brunt of the attack. And so kind of interesting there. Visually, the game is really good. Polygonal characters have been converted into little chibi sprites and then, you know, 2D portraits, paper dolls that Sean would love, set against the 3D back. Despite all the activity in combat, I mean, combat's really action heavy, the frame rate rarely flutters. And then you have these big giant sprites like the Valkyrie. She comes down with a butt first attack, or Bruno from Die Hard Arcade. A.K.A. Bruce Willis, he exits in a wild panic or sometimes on fire. In combat, characters use their attack animations in games, so you'll see, like, Sir Arthur throw his blue napalm, his axes, or, you know, when he's powered up in his golden armor, lightning, you know, uses lightning attack, and Bruno smashes with a grandfather clock. About the only downside I'll say about the game is that I haven't been able to play it for really long periods of time. I prefer to play it, like, a chapter at a time, and I don't really know why that is. Missions themselves, they'll kind of change midway and they keep things interesting. And the game is always throwing new things at players. But, you know, for one reason or another, I just like to take it little bits and pieces at a time. I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to stretch out the purported 60-hour playtime. But really digging it. Total fan fiction.
So here's a question. What is the prime universe in this game? Like, where does the – you said there's a stone, a magical stone. Like, what is the – what's the alpha universe in this?
There are two main characters, and I think that theirs is kind of the prime. So I guess it's, I don't know, it's kind of earthish.
Oh, so are they new characters for the game, or?
Yeah, they're new characters. Kind of the.
Okay, so it's not like Street Fighter is the prime universe, and everyone else comes to Street Fighter.
No, but they know each other. But they all kind of know each other, like
that's lame.
You know, Tekken and the. No, that's really cool.
Oh, I mean, it's cool.
Because that's what drives it. Because the whole thing is like. Oh, here's Street Fighter and Tekken, except for, you know, the cross game. They've never really interacted that much. And here you have all these different characters kind of interacting. And they know or they've heard about each other. Or they have alliances or they have difference of opinion. They bicker, you know. And so it's really interesting. Like the villains are drawn mainly from fighting games. You'll have or the bosses from fighting games. You'll have some of the enemies from, like, role-playing games. Oh, you have the music. I remember in the first the Ghouls and Ghosts song kicked in. I got all happy hearing that. And it's fan fiction.
So they're all, like, self-aware of everything. So what you're saying is
yes.
There's always a man, there's always a city, there's always a lighthouse. Nothing. Never mind.
It's also limited edition, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm not sure if you're engaging in that, Blue, but... Knowing what I know now, I would probably buy the I don't buy too many collector's editions, but this is one I definitely want to keep. I can see myself coming back, digging it. Also, Grid 2, let me talk about that for a little bit. I didn't get it in for review, but it's a racer, so I couldn't pass it up once I saw it on store shelves. And fortunately, it's already hit a $20 price drop. $40. Blue, I'd probably recommend maybe the 20 or 30 mark for you. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing about Codemasters is that they've been at the forefront of racing for quite a while, at least going back to the Colin McRae games for the PS1. They were the ones that got me hooked. Over the years, they came up with the flashback function, which I believe originated in the first Grid and got copied by almost every racer after that. They were kind of at the forefront of vehicular... deformation, and did a great job of striking a balance between simmy but accessible. The codies, they'll say this isn't a simulation, but it's definitely a step above the Need for Speed series, something like that. So that said, across the past few years, they've kind of let the Dirt series slip, and so I was worried that Grid 2 was going a little too mainstream. And that fear is probably only articulated in the presentation, which feels very Americanized. Now, I know that sounds strange coming from an American, but I'm used to the kind of Englishness of Codemasters and their announcers and the venues, things like that. Here,
you mean the Britishness?
Yes.
It is the British way.
But here you have this American. His name is not Harry Callahan. That's Dirty Harry. Patrick Callahan.
Callahan.
That'd be awesome.
Be kind of awesome. Can you take that?
Anyway, he's looking to start this new racing league, and so it's your mission to gather fans and cultivate this racing league by winning different races and becoming Patrick's star of the circuit. The problem is he's this disembodied voice talking to you, so it feels like Charlie giving directions to the angels most of the time, and there's no Bob in here. That's a little weird. Now, some people made a fuss about the first-person driving being excised from the game. I'm a third-person slacker, so that really didn't affect me. Don't think less of me. But what did affect me was what they call True Feel, and that's this complex system. It's designed to articulate the personality of the car, but at the same time remove the assists. So things like controlling the throttle, braking, you know, those type of things are turned off. And there's no, what do you call it, the racing line. There's no racing line in this. So it's still manageable for the average player. In short, it's solid. Each car has its kind of own, I guess you'd say, a learning curve, and they're graded on complication. And so some of the really heavy, high-end rear wheel rear-powered beasts. Will come much later. Occasionally, you do get some cars which behave in unexpected ways. But overall, you know, I think there's a solid driving physics system. Where things fall apart is about four-fifths of the way through the career mode. By the fourth year, you've seen the majority of the content. So the tracks, the cars, the amount of new stuff is a bit limited. Yes, there is night driving blue, but here, I guess this is what kind of turned me off about night driving. It's just not that interesting. Also, the fourth year is where the AI jumps up, and they're constantly trying to crash into you, which... you know, it's kind of weird because they're leaving the other CPU-driven competitors alone.
That doesn't
and
sound
on a
very
few tracks, it's just
like.
All out. No, it's not. And so you're using your limited amount of flashbacks there, and it's really kind of frustrating because winning first place, and all of a sudden it just jumped up, became more of a struggle and not as much fun. Now, what saves Grid 2 is the multiplayer. You sign up for, I believe it's called race.net. And then the game can create this league out of similar skilled players, and you can also race asynchronously, which is kind of cool. And winning races, you know, you earn XP, which can be used to buy better cars and upgrades, and it's totally different from the campaign. And if you're craving multiplayer racing competition, this might be the game to get into right now. So I do like it for that. So fun... very tense. There's moments in the game where you just feel that you are on the edge of losing control. Sometimes you'll kind of drift off the side of the road, and if you don't, you know, it gives you enough time where you can bring the car back. You know, you can hit the brakes a little bit, and it doesn't always have to be a wipeout. And it's really interesting the way it constantly puts you on that edge of control. Their traction's articulated well. You can usually feel when you're losing traction, and to me, that's always a sign of a good racer.
I have one question.
Yes, Jeremy, shoot.
Does it have drivatars?
In the cloud?
Or the AI?
Drivatars are the in Forza, what they showed at the Microsoft thing, your drivatars.
Which were in the original Forza Motorsport.
Yeah, they were.
Did not require a cloud, I might add.
Yeah. Anyway, if there's no drivatars in this, there's no sale.
What do they call them in fighting games when they learn from your fighting style?
They call them ghosts.
Oh.
Ghosts. I like fightatars.
Fightatar.
I can get behind that.
Pushy push marshmallows and fightatars. That's my home.
So that's all I've really been playing.
Oh, that's not bad. Grid 2.
Project Cross Zone.
Project that's Cross Zone.
Or as Jeremy says, Project X Zone.
Project X Zone. You're going to the X Zone.
Do 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 do.
No,
oh, wait,
no,
that's
wrong
Twilight
Zone.
Twilight Zone.
So I mentioned a little bit earlier the latest AAA game for the 3DS, Animal Crossing New Leaf, which just came out this past week. And has everybody
tell
here
me
played...
about Animal Crossing Wild World?
Yeah, well, Animal Crossing Wild World was the best iteration of Animal Crossing up to that point, and I don't think anybody played City
bullshit.
Folk.
Huh?
Bullshit.
I'm calling bullshit. The original one, still the best.
No, that's baloney. That's yes. Baloney. If only
yes, because
it was the first time.
Those 8-bit games that you could buy and collect.
You know what?
That was...
Ooh, yeah. Honestly,
those are good.
They're good, but nobody like that's not a selling point. Like they're more of a curiosity.
That was.
Nah.
No.
Well, they were good.
You got the full 8-bit game.
I know.
Those were high indulged, and that pushed me to collect.
Yeah, and then they had like e-reader stuff. I mean, that was cool, but okay, whatever. But Wild World, undisputed, whatever Robert says, Wild World was the best. I think just by the process of sheer iteration, I think that means that New Leaf now has to be the best. Let me ask, is there anybody who... I guess you guys both have played it then. Sage, did you ever play Animal Crossing games? Okay, good, because I need to feel like I'm explaining the concept to somebody, so
okay.
I'll use you.
Me!
Which I'm going to tell you what Animal Crossing is about.
Tell me all about it.
So Animal Crossing is a little bit like a chibi life simulator, I'd say. Yes. So you are a little round-headed kid, which actually was an episode of the show. You can go check it out. It was a great episode. you move away from your parents, and you live in this anthropomorphic animal town. And it's out in the middle of nature, so there's trees and bugs and fish and fossils and things that are out in the landscape. And
fossils?
Fossils. There are
Sigoy!
Yeah, golden balls. And so the idea is that you basically start from nothing and, you know, claw and fight your way to the top of the chibi animal food chain. So,
as an animal.
It, well, as a
manifest destiny.
Yeah. So basically what I'm saying is it's basically like Hotline Miami, you know, where you put on an animal mask and go. No, actually, I really do like, though, I'm really pleased that in the last few weeks the creepy Animal Crossing kid has become a great meme on the internet. You should go check those out. They're pretty funny. But the thing is that you basically have free reign. It's essentially a collectathon, so you can collect and create your own clothing. You can wear hats and shirts, and now they've added socks in this. You can design your own things with little, you know, templates that are, you know, 32 by 32 grid, you know, pixel things. You can design your own stuff, which is a lot of fun. You can collect furniture for your little house. You pay off your house and get a bigger house that you then put more stuff in. So it's kind of like that grind in other games where it's, I got to get more stuff to get more money, to get more stuff, to get more money, to get more stuff. And the thing about Animal Crossing is that they have not gotten it wrong yet. I mean, the formula is so good that there is just something super addictive about it. And I even thought when I got this, I partly got this just out of the sheer peer pressure of it, because all of the grown-ass men out there on Twitter talking about how awesome it is that they just collected the new, you know, paw print wallpaper and, oh my God, check out my QR code. Come visit my
Isn't there like a Reggie My Body Is Ready art painting
QR code? There's probably all kinds of stuff. but that's the thing. So there's user-created content. The other thing is that since the Wild World DS version, they've added it so that – well, actually, you could do it in the GameCube version even, where you would bring your memory card over and visit someone else's town. So you can do it here via Wi-Fi. It used to be called the Nintendo Wi-Fi Connection. Remember that? R.I.P.
Yeah.
Nintendo Wi-Fi connection. You can have your town gate open and actually interact with other people and go on little events together, go out to the, you know, the special little island where they have little games and things you can do. So that's just generally the idea of Animal Crossing in general. Now, some of the new stuff that they've added in New Leaf. Now, I have to say that this has only been out a week or so, and I am not a, you know, time-warping maniac. I don't set it ahead to Christmas and open all my presents and stuff. But there are a few things that are new right off the bat. Now, it is definitely iterative. Really part of the attraction is that all of your friends are playing this now. So if you want to get Animal Crossing and you want to get in on this, now is really probably the time to do it, quite honestly. And I want to say it's $35 retail right now. So $35, $40 you'll be paying. So
wait, so why is now the time?
Because everybody's playing it now. I mean, it's really
moved on yet.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it is the bandwagon. It's totally the bandwagon.
Gotcha.
Which, the interesting thing, though, about this is that the content of this is real time. So one of the things I didn't mention is that this is all based on your system clock. Time passes in real time. If you play the game at, you know, 7 in the morning, the sun is going to be coming up. It'll play a certain little song for the 7 o'clock hour, and certain bugs and fish will be out at that certain time of day, so you can catch those and go take them to your museum and build your little exhibits. Or if you come and play after work, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock at night, the sun will be going down, and the lights will be turning on in your little town, and you know, people are going to be watching the sunset or whatever. Different events happen real time. And the calendar is real time, too. So you're going to have not only the day-night cycles, but timed events, holidays. They're going to be sort of the little, you know, they're not going to have actual Christmas. Well, I think they do have something called Christmas, but, you know, it's not going to be, you're not going to, you know, Yom Kippur is not going to be a holiday that you celebrate, but you have Yay Day. Yay!
Are you saying that Yay Day is a more legitimate holiday than Yom Kippur?
In the world of Animal Crossing, it is indeed, my Jewish.
I'm going to burn every copy I find to the ground.
You're so religiously intolerant. but so the thing is, though, that the content of this can theoretically go forever. I mean, you can actually go back to your old GameCube memory card, and if you can plug that into your Wii, it'll be overgrown with weeds, but it'll still be there. All of those sad animal people will still be there in their little digital prison, wondering where their god has gone. Theoretically, you could be playing this for years. The realistic expectation that you're going to have this many people playing at the same time to actually interact and have a lot of fun together, it's going to taper off as time goes on. So, again, I got it purely out of peer pressure, I admit it, but it's super fun. I didn't think I was going to be having this much fun with it, but it's got me hooked again. I don't think I'm going to be playing the same crazy hours that everybody else is, but let me describe briefly some of the new things here. So on your 3DS version, the first person, if you have multiple people in your family, family like I do, me and my kids will play this. The first person to play is elected the mayor. So before, there was Mayor Tortimer, who would basically do nothing as a useless old turtle.
Has he died?
There's a picture of him hanging up in the mayor's office. It's a little ambiguous. I like to think that he died in Vegas, you know, too many hookers and blow, had a little bit of an overdose, and it's shuffled off.
Jesus.
Oil. Yeah, that's my...
You give Grandpa Turtle some sugar.
Yeah, that's my narrative for Animal Crossing. But, so you get to become the mayor, and really, most of what that means is that you have a responsibility to maintain public opinion, and once you have the popular public opinion, you can start to enact little civic projects. So you can start to do things like building lampposts or benches, park benches to sit on, things like that. And it sets up a little gyroid, so those of you who are familiar with Animal Crossing will remember the cute little gyroids. And you then start to deposit money to build these public works. And that's essentially, you know, you get the chance to customize your town a little bit. You can also put out, like, a green town mandate where people start planting trees and flowers and things like that. But you have to maintain a certain level of popular opinion, and you can go to your mayor's office, and your little assistant, Isabella, will tell you, you know, everything that everyone is saying about you. And it's, you know... The thing is, you can't really, like, tax people or anything either. So all of this, it's basically like an unfunded mandate. And I think what ultimately ends up happening, at least in my experience so far, is that I'm setting up my own mandates and then paying for them myself out of my own pocket. So the mayor gig is not all that it's cracked up to be, I'm afraid. So that's new. There's also a sort of a custom market. They now have, instead of just the Tom Nook store, everybody's probably familiar with Tom Nook, the raccoon shyster. His sons, Timmy and Tommy, now run the establishment. I can't even remember if it's called Nook's Cranny or if they've got a new name for it.
It used to be called Nook's Cranny, and then as the building got upgraded, it would become like Nook Way and... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's now like Lil Nookie something. They did it for the Nookie. I don't know what it is. So there's now the retail, R-E-T-A-I-L, which is where you do most of your selling of all of your junk. So the economy of Animal Crossing is sort of based on this trash economy where you basically go out and find just random garbage and bring it to them, and they will give you a ton of actual money for it. So now there's retail where you can do that, and you can actually now set your own prices for things that you decide to put on display. There's a little auction house so people who come to your town can decide to buy it. So if you have something that's really rare, you can make a killing, that sort of thing. And the interface in general on this, I think, is a lot more streamlined than it used to be. It used to be, even in Wild World, I feel like you had to select things one at a time if you wanted to do anything. That is one thing about Animal Crossing, though, that is, especially for younger players, if you think about the steps to get something done in any given game, it's usually like one button press or two button pressers. And just kind of by necessity, there's a lot of correspondence, writing letters, and you basically are like tapping out on this little keyboard, or you have this inventory that you have to manage. So for some people, if you don't really like managing an inventory, there's a lot of inventory management that goes on here. And I know that sounds really kind of stupid and petty, but if you think about it, Animal Crossing, like click for click or touch for touch, is probably one of the most complicated games around, just because in order to do anything, you have to, like, select a thing and then choose what you're going to do with it and then apply it to your person. And then you decide you don't like that, so you tell it to remove it. And in order to do that, you have to free up another slot in your inventory. And so that, I guess, is a little bit of a complexity. And the other thing is that aside from the actual grind, and if for some reason you don't really enjoy the collectathon, and almost everybody enjoys the collectathon, even my mom played Animal Crossing on the GameCube. No, she got Wild World, too. She played a ton of it. She upgraded her house all the way. I never upgraded my house all the way in Animal Crossing Wild World, but my mom, like, maxed everything out. So there's definitely a broad appeal to a lot of people in Animal Crossing. So if you've played Animal Crossing, you kind of know what to expect. It is as good as the previous ones. Again, I never played the Town... Or, I'm sorry, City Folk. Again, I don't know if anybody actually did.
Not too many either, I don't think.
So I think that the little city, the fact that there's an extra little area for retail and that sort of thing, I think that was new in City Folk, and that they've carried that over in this. Just in general, I think they've just sort of taken another step in the evolution of the game, just iterated on it.
Jeremy, have you ever played Harvest Moon?
Blue, I want to answer your question about Brewster because I loved Brewster the character and I love the music, and there's some good remixes of Brewster's music. I haven't seen Brewster yet. I don't know if he's there or not. Toto KK is a DJ now. Again, this game's only been out a week, so he's not strumming his guitar anymore. He's a DJ now. And they also have like a little comedy club you can go to. But I haven't seen Brewster yet. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. But I'm sorry, Robert, what was that?
Have you played any of the Harvest Moon games?
Yes. In fact, I may
You're
have...
a fan?
I do like Harvest Moon. I like the idea that you can grow something and have progress and sell the the stuff, the fruits of your labor. I think my sad story with Animal Crossing, though, was there was one night when I left all my chickens out in the rain, and I saved my game after that, but before I found out that I couldn't get enough medicine for all of them. So my favorite chicken, Cluck Jr., sadly, is doomed to die on the last game I played was Save the Homeland. And Cluck Jr., I just can't bear to see that poor little guy bite the bullet. So he's going to be forever in that limbo. So I haven't gone back.
You think that that's better to forever leave him in I'm sick and dying limbo than to just let him move on?
It's not suffering.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. He doesn't exist either way. So if you can get invested in him enough, which is something I don't understand about, like, I can't play these games because I don't give a shit at all. But, like, if you can get invested in enough in little Cluck Jr. to not want him to die, then you should, knowing that he doesn't feel anything because he's just coding, then you should also be able to get invested in the idea that it'd be like keeping a pet in real life in a miserable state instead of letting them move on when, like, there's nothing you can do, and if you don't let them die now, they're just going to suffer and then die. So you just want them to suffer indefinitely instead of dying?
You monster.
No, I'm not a monster. You're the monster. You're leaving him
emotional. You're the monster.
There was this Android game where it was kind of this pet-raising simulation. And I was probably only I was in the first week, and one of my puppies was about to die. And I was like, fuck this. I deleted the whole app.
Yeah, that's it. You just
So I could get behind
Fiery it. Holocaust on the entire world for the sake of that one little puppy. Yeah, no,
I
consider it more like a cryostasis situation. There is no suffering. We're just waiting for a cure.
But there's not.
I have to be honest. I reload saves in, like, Grand Theft Auto and... like Saints Row or whatever, when I run over pedestrians by accident.
That's awesome. I love that. You know what I really like? In Grand Theft Auto 4, when you would run over people, because a lot of people have problems with, like, the narrative dissonance of Grand Theft Auto. I run
Who
over...
Who the fuck says that?
A ton of people. It's a big issue. And honestly, yeah. There's actually a discussion worth having there, but I really liked in Grand Theft Auto 4 how when you would drive over people, Nico would be like, I'm sorry about that. Right. Oh, you know, I try. So, Animal Crossing New Leaf, you pretty much better just get it, basically, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Gotta get it.
Yeah, yeah. So,
gotta catch them all.
Yep. So, the other thing that I've been playing is the Dungeons & Dragons...
Dungeon Driving game.
Yes.
Dungeons & Driving.
Let's try this again. Dungeons & Dragons, The Chronicles of Mystara. Which is a sort of I'm still not sure if I should classify this as an HD remake because, I guess first of all, let's talk about what the game is. So Chronicles of Mystara is a re-release by Capcom of a couple of coin-op or arcade brawlers from who knows when, you know, back in the day. And
90s.
Yeah, the 90s. The games play a lot like Golden Axe. I mean, they're sort of in the same vein as, you know, other... I mean, even, like, the other two-pack brawler that they re-released, you know, there was Final Fight and Magic Sword. It's not even quite like Magic Sword, because Magic Sword is almost more of, like, a side-scrolling action kind of game. I don't know if I would really consider that a brawler. This is, like, a full-on brawler, though, and it's a lot like Golden Axe. The thing about it is that you can do the pickups that you can do. So you can pick up money, like coins. You can also pick up items that you can use that are sort of mapped to, I guess you would consider it, like, the magic button, I guess you might say. So you can find little hammers to throw on guys, and it'll give them, you know, a little knockout effect or stars. You can get daggers to throw and magic fireball scrolls and things like that. So that makes it pretty much right away a little more interesting than Golden Axe. Golden Axe was always pretty simple because you had your fighting and then your magic, and depending on your character, your magic was either stronger or weaker. So they have that. It's also four players, and you can basically do drop-in, drop-out co-op. This is actually a really great remake in that it actually adds a lot of basically all the features that you'd expect to see on a console version of this game. And I think you can even play with any mix of local and online players. Now, the thing is, I've only played single player because nobody loves me.
I'll play with you, Jeremy.
Robert loves me. And it's
sometimes
true. Like I said, I think you can do any mix of local and co-op, and it's a lot more fun with more people, because, I mean, just like, you know,
Gold, what isn't?
Example. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Unless it's online only, you guys, right?
Yeah.
The thing about it is that it is definitely, I mean, they haven't changed, the game was built for coins, so it kind of has that same, like, you remember even some of the Konami ones, like X-Men and stuff? Does anybody else ever feel like you are just constantly getting killed all the time, and it just
later in the game
so cheap and frustrating? This kind of has that, but the levels are also kind of short, and you also have unlimited continues. So if you,
I think that's the case only with the bosses.
Yeah,
and even the bosses have kind of tell.
Yeah, like some
defend
some
and
repeat stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I just always felt like I don't know, on these sorts of games, even though I love them, like I love a good brawler. People keep saying there are no good brawlers anymore, or brawlers are no fun. For some reason, it's like one of my like weirdly nostalgic
Double.
Favorite sort of genre.
Yep,
Double Dragon Neon.
Double Dragon Neon is so damn good. That Double Dragon 2 thing though, shit. We talked about that.
Fist Puncher, Jeremy.
Oh, my
Fist
God.
Puncher.
Oh, I want to hear about that. For Indie Outlook, I really want to hear about Fist Puncher. It looks awesome. I've seen Sai tweeting about it, like, all week. It looks great.
I think she's getting paid.
Yeah, maybe. anyway, so...
Where are these rainbow-colored money hats coming from?
Yeah. So the HD thing on this is that it's not really HD. Like, they didn't redraw it. They sort of used... Do you remember... Yeah, do you remember in the Sonic, what's it called? The Sonic, help me out
collection.
Here, Sonic Genesis Collection, something
Ultimate
like that?
Ultimate. Sonic.
So yeah, Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection, I think it is.
Yeah.
You would have the option to play either in the original graphics, mm-hmm. which are like, gag me, or they
Photoshop
filter. Smoothing, yeah, they do like the smoothing thing, where they sort of, the edges are a little more...
like, basically, they slap Vaseline on the screen.
Kind of. So, but I know a lot of people complain about that, too. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, that's so gross, and I want to play the original. I could see it either way. They're both equally gross. And in this case, it doesn't look bad. It actually, you know, it actually works
pretty well. Now, Jeremy, did you go in and actually, you can format the game so that the screen looks like the original dual monitor arcade?
No,
you
I didn't
put it
do
in
that.
The raster lines. Yeah, go into the options menu. And some of the formats, you can bring it out widescreen, or it's normal, it was 4x3. But there's one that looks like the original arcade cabinet where there's two screens side by side, which is kind of cool. I didn't play it like that, but it's cool that they put it in.
Yeah. And they've actually put in a lot of other stuff too. So this is one of those games when it was originally in the arcades, I would sort of watch it and I maybe played it once or twice, but it kind of had this weird, like, weird place in my mind where it's like, oh, like, it's so great, I really want to play it. I think I mentioned in one of our weekend previews, like, this and Willow the arcade game is the other one. I have no idea if Willow the arcade game is actually any good. It's probably terrible. But in my mind, it's like, oh my God, I really want to play that. So this was like that too for me. And, you know, it's all
right.
The
only thing it's missing is I wish you could remap some of the buttons. Like, for instance, when you use magic, you kind of have to hold it
magic.
In a circle. I wish I could map that to the right stick.
Like the triggers or something like that.
Yeah, and then blocking is kind of a little funky because you have to hold back and then you press a button.
Yeah.
And I wish there was just, I could map that to the trigger.
Yeah.
Even if that's cheating. But the one thing I want to add is there are some kind of Street Fighter, there's some quarter circle commands and things like that. Mm-hmm. They take it beyond the usual kind of beat 'em up staples.
Yeah, and so the other thing is they've added like house rules modes where you can do just like crazy little spins on. And the thing is, I don't know that this is going to give you the same feeling. Like, if you finish one of these games, I don't know that it's going to be quite the same achievement just because, again, there's unlimited continues and, you know, I think it's more of like a little bit of a party game, like just fun to go through and have fun. And the house rules, I think, kind of play into that where it's like, let's just turn this on and, you know, just fuck around for a little while.
Well, one of those regenerates health when you kill enemies, and so that negates some of the, you know, the constantly putting quarters in the machine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's definitely still designed for, you know, eating your quarters. So there's, like I said, you're not going to get away from that. But it is quite fun. A little bit, I don't want to say it's expensive, but $15.
Yeah.
I don't know how much, I mean, that's what, 15 times 4 is what, 60 quarters? So for the low, low price of, it's still $15.
And then you get two games, so.
Yeah, that's true. So there's Tower.
Yeah, I agree. So. Yeah, 10 would have been great. 15.
Yeah, it's not bad. And for, you know, fans of the genre will love it, but it's ultimately a mixed bag. Also,
bag, Jeremy?
No, I was. That's just the line.
Okay, your review speak.
Yes, exactly. Fans of the genre, but it's a mixed bag. Also, no move controls on the PlayStation version, so it's automatically. Yeah, that's it. No good. Can't do it. No, but it's a lot of fun.
0 out of 10.
And if you have this game, you know, hit us up on Twitter, something for players, you know, let's get it rocking and rolling. Dungeons and Dragons. My only problem with this game for real is I wanted to be the barbarian kid with the unicorn. That's all I really wanted. Eh? Anybody? No?
That's just terrible.
No?
I killed a unicorn in Saints Row 3.
That's cool. Tell us about that.
Jeremy, what's with you tonight?
What do you mean?
You're very, like, I am fancy, correct PR guy tonight, like, with your...
But Jeremy, every night.
Yeah, but it's especially, I think that comment about the ladies who want him made it go to his head, and now he's being especially charming or something.
That was pre-show banter, off the record, but...
Oh, well, you know.
Basically,
they don't know
not,
what I said.
It's not canonical with the rest of the podcast.
That's true, we're retconning this whole thing.
Nothing is canonical, nothing.
There's always a man, always a lighthouse, always a city.
I'm gonna pee on you.
Wow.
Is that supposed to be an insult or more proof that the ladies want him?
Oh, God, no.
Next up on the Golden Shower Hour.
It seems like the best thing to say to someone to get them to stop, because most people do. If you're like, I'm going to pee on you, they just go, wait, what?
Be like, can I pick where?
Then you run away from that person.
Sorry, Blue, go on about Saints Row.
Yes, sir.
How many giant dildo bats did you hit people?
You know, I honestly really didn't use the, and this is the actual name, I might add, the penetrator.
Oh.
Did anybody...
I really did not use the penetrator that much, but basically it's the I can't remember exactly how they described it, but it's like the viciousness of a baseball bat combined with the sex appeal of a dildo.
Oh, man.
And it's a ginormous pink baseball bat dildo.
Those exist in real life.
When THQ closed down, did anybody see that picture of Jason Rubin leaving THQ with his giant dildo?
No.
It was the best picture.
Can you post it?
Yeah, we can put it in the show notes. It is the best. That might be the cover art.
Yes.
He has this very serious, like, you know, sad look on his face. It was just really good. Anyway, I'm sorry. Big giant dildo. Carry on.
But yeah, basically to set it up a bit, I finally pulled the trigger in, 7 years after it came out, I finally decided to get myself a PS3.
Yay, one of us. One of us. One of us.
Terrible.
Best Buy had a deal on the Uncharted 3 Game of the Year Edition bundle. I believe it was like $239. And I was kind of thinking of getting it for myself for my birthday anyway, so I figured get myself an early birthday present. And last week, Saints Row the Third joined the PlayStation Plus collection, or the Instant Game collection, I should say. So I downloaded that, and I was on a little bit of a break from Uncharted 3, which is good. I finished it yesterday. You know, it was my first console Uncharted, and I was definitely pleased with it. Gonna play the rest of the series eventually. But as for Saints Row, I described it on Twitter as being Grand Theft Auto, but fun. You know, it's like Grand Theft Auto, it's rather serious all the time. You know, I mean, there's like a seriousness to the entire universe. You know, I mean, granted, there'll be some comedy bits here and there, but it's like the entire game, the entire franchise takes itself too seriously, or at least it did with Grand Theft Auto 4. The PS2 ones were a little bit better with that. But you know, perfect example of, you know, kind of like the lighthearted nature of this is you go to try to get somebody, get this one guy who's working with, I can't quite remember whether he was like working with like the enemy of the saints or what, but you have to go break up a BDSM club.
Of course.
Of course. And the guy that you're going to find, he basically, you know, apparently, I'm not sure if he's returning from the previous games because this is the first one I've played, but apparently he doesn't have a voice box after getting shot in the throat or something like that. So he speaks through one of those, like, vocoder microphone type things. Oh, yeah, yeah. And he talks kind of like this, and he frequently uses the word bitches. And
that is pretty funny.
You know, that single-handedly, I am almost considering. I actually have this game on Steam and from, you know, PS Plus, and I just had not even considered it, but that sounds actually really funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a really good sense of humor, and, well, like, of course, this may turn playing it, but when you actually find the guy you're looking for, he's in black leather underwear and he's got a bunch of straps on and a gimp mask, and somehow it kind of ends up turning into like a chase sequence where that guy is pulling you and another one of your homies in like a rickshaw, and you're shooting other people who are being pulled by bondage people in the rickshaw. if I remember correctly, I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, especially considering it was free through PlayStation Plus. And you know, there's something, you know, it's going to be a minor spoiler as far as the actual plot of the game goes, but it's one of those few times where the main character's reaction matched my own. You're going in to meet the mayor of Steelport, I believe it is. And, you know, you're not sure who the mayor is. And, you know, this one girl that's in your gang, she says, "Don't fuck with the mayor." And, you know, main character's like, "Oh, you know, well, who the hell's the mayor? I'm this guy, yada, yada, yada." He goes in, and his reaction was word for word my reaction to. And it was, and I quote, "Burt fucking Reynolds?" The mayor of the game is actually Burt Reynolds. And it's like when you see him, it's like, you know, the chair's, you know, facing out of the office, out the window. And there is like a stripper or a hooker dressed as a cop and she's making out with him. And you see the cowboy hat. And then when he turns around, the stripper gets up. It's Burt Reynolds. And it's like the real Burt Reynolds. And it's just like it's just one of those things where it's like it's so completely fucking random that it's absolutely perfect. It's kind of like my kind of humor. Try to go for the random, completely obscure and hilarious because it's obscure kind of things.
Here's a question though: is it more like Smokey and the Bandit Burt Reynolds, or is it more like Evening Shade Burt Reynolds?
I'm gonna go with Smokey and the Bandit Burt Reynolds, because I haven't seen Evening Shade. Perhaps I shouldn't admit that. But
how about Cannonball Run? You've seen that, right, Blue?
Dom DeLuise. You know, is Dom DeLuise in this game? He needs to be.
Yes. Come on, that's got Jackie Chan in it. He's playing Japanese.
I must admit, I'm a little bit lacking on my Burt Reynolds movies, but I have Stroker Apex on DVD. Haven't watched it in a couple of years though. Seem to remember Dolly Parton having a great rack in that movie.
Jesus, Blue, that's literally maybe the most chauvinistic thing I've ever heard you say ever.
Well,
hey,
to
I'm
be
a
honest,
guy.
She's got a great rack all the time, isn't
yeah,
that
but
the point?
Usually you talk about like Sailor Moon or you say nice things. You don't usually say like, man, Dolly Parton fucking stacked. Like, that's not the thing I expect you to say.
It's okay, listener Dollywood. It's okay.
Yeah. And I see commercials for Dollywood quite often. And yeah. And Dolly still got it. But yeah, I mean, all in all, it's a great game. You know, I mean, now I will say it's an HQ game, so like WWE 13, it is kind of glitchy. One of the draws to, you know, me and to the cheap ass gamer community was that CheapyD was going to be in the game as a homie you could call up, and he'll show up and he'll drop like podcast references. Man, you're worse than Wombat, and lines like that. But the homie's system is kind of glitchy. So, like, for example, I called CheapyD in to help me secure this one piece of territory in the city. And, you know, we're kicking ass, and, you know, he's shooting stuff, and he's saying, oh, I'm totally going to tell Shipwreck about this. And, you know, finish it out, you know, I'm rolling with CheapyD, and then, you know, I guess I saved my game and I quit out, and I go, you know, play the game either later that night or the following day, and CheapyD's name is grayed out from my phone menu, and has stayed this way for like 10 hours. It's like the phone system is glitchy to the point where if you call somebody in, you might never get the opportunity to call them in again. Because it's for some reason it fucks up, and I'm unable to call Burt Reynolds in, because another spoiler, if you complete a certain mission one way, you get the you get to have Burt Reynolds and a SWAT team as your homies. You can call, you know, either one of them in.
Wow.
But yeah,
more powerful? I bet Burt Reynolds would trump the SWAT team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a neat concept, but it's like I was never able to get Burt Reynolds to roll in because there's some sort of a glitch where your homies always appear as having a busy signal when you try to call them. And, you know, I still haven't been able to roll with Burt Reynolds, and it pisses me off, and I can't. Yeah, and the homie system is a pretty important system, actually, because there's going to be times where you are outnumbered 10-1, if not more, by opposing gang members, and you want to have like a couple of like gang members or Burt Reynolds or this big guy named, well, it's a little bit of a spoiler, but this big guy named Oleg. And, you know, if you're in a tight situation, you don't necessarily want to like burn your only use of having them as your contact. Or burn your only use of calling them in as a homie. But at the same time, you know, you kind of need it, you know, and it's kind of, you have to, it's basically you have to weigh things out. If you really want to, you know, use up what could very well be your only chance to use this person. And, you know, that's the only real negative I have with the game. I mean, aside from that, I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, was not able to find the septic tank truck. I'm not sure if they took it out for Saints Row the Third, but I would have had a lot of fun with that.
Besides Rip Taylor, maybe Gallagher, what other washed-up celebrities would you like to see for the sequel?
Well, perhaps this is just me, but the game did have a couple of pro wrestlers on the voice cast. Yeah. Hulk Hogan voices one of the homies you can call in called Angel, and Rob Van Dam was a commentator in Murder Brawl 31 or something like that.
Hulk Hogan.
So I would, oh yeah, that would probably be one of my personal favorites.
Richard Simmons.
Oh yeah, Jeremy nailed it on that one.
Yes. Yeah, that would be perfect.
And the thing is, he should be like a total, like just a badass.
I know, with the short shorts, just kicking ass, just curb stomping people.
Yep.
I'm gonna dance your ass into shape, honey.
Welcome to Indie Outlook, that part of the Tech Gaming Podcast where we talk about substantial experiences crafted by smaller design teams. I'm Robert, my co-host, as always, is the Killing Floor, Loving Sai.
Hello.
Have you been playing a lot of Killing Floor lately?
No, I haven't. I haven't, unfortunately.
You murdered Killing Floor?
I need to kill more zombies, but don't worry, we'll get
it. So we got plenty to talk about today, where we're going to talk a little bit about jumping into base and some closed-handed pugnaciousness. So let's jump right in to...
Rush Bros!
Rush Bros, yes. So one of the things is Savvy Gamers, they might remember Half Brick Studios, the creators of Fruit Ninja. They created a game called Roskulls that came out on the tail end of 2010. And what that game was about was it was a mix of platforming and the racing genre. This 2D side-scrolling element where you had these hectic matches where up to four players would run, jump, and they'd zap colored blocks.
Zap.
Yes, they'd zap them. Much like Mr. Driller. Do you remember Mr. Driller, Sai?
No, not really.
No? That famous Namco coin op? That was a good one. So anyway, that's the closest point of reference for Rush Brothers, but I'm sure it's going to go over some people's
kind of random.
Yeah, so it's a game. One of the things it does is it trades Roskulls' Saturday morning aesthetic for this dubstep-drenched nightclub vibe. And Xyla is the developer. It's their first title, published on Steam through Digital Tribes. And I think that the game shows promise. Personally, I would have liked to seen the game perhaps be a little less hectic. But before we get to that,
By hectic, what do you mean exactly?
By hectic.
Because there's a lot of things.
Let's talk about when we were playing. So players assume the role.
Oh, when you were cheating, you mean?
Yes, when I was grabbing the power-ups.
Cheater.
No, that's called smart play. Not cheating.
Oh, the hell.
So players assume the role of two brothers by the name of Bass and Treble. So I guess they were fated to be DJs. And the opening cinematic kind of explains that they had this great collaborative career, and then it all fell apart and turned to shit, and of course the brothers parted ways. Much like the brothers from Oasis. So Rush Brothers, the concept is that it is this reunion of the siblings. They have this friendly DJ competition.
What's up with you? You're running over your words again.
I am. Beep, beep. Beep. So this friendly DJ competition, it's represented as a journey through these mazes filled with gaps and saw blades and spikes and all kinds of stuff. So much like a true sibling rivalry. You like the game?
Yes, I did like the game. It's just that I'm going to be honest. I don't think it's a game that many will actually enjoy. It's very, very specific audience, I think. Because everything, I mean, yes, the puzzles were great. Some were extremely complicated, as some were way too simple, in my opinion. But the colors and the music and everything in between, it was a good mix. It's just that I don't know if, you know, I think it does require, or it's designed just with the purpose of doing it with the music that it offers.
Okay.
I remember when I was actually trying it out.
Yes.
And I did try to incorporate different kind of music into the game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it doesn't really.
What did you play? What did you put on?
I'm not telling you.
Was it Celine Dion?
I actually played the Fray.
It's not bad.
It's not bad, but you know, some regular beats were really difficult.
Kicked off the show, But the fray, you get to stay for the fray. Oh, that's good. No, the one thing I noticed more seriously is that for me, I put on different soundtracks. My problem with the game is music integration. To me, the tempo of the game, it only affects these, they're like little platforms, piston-like platforms, and certain dangers, but on some levels, they only show up once every, say, three screens. And the problem...
I think it depends on the puzzle, but yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the level, but on a lot of them, they're few and far between. And so, for me, Rush Brothers didn't really feel all that tied to the music. The music was there, it was pumping, it was driving the action. And one of the things I would have liked to seen is environmental objects that kind of change color based on the baseline or background shapes that would kind of really sell the rhythmic component of the game just a little bit more.
You know, I've got to say that the highlight of my gaming experience with this game has got to be the multiplayer option. I actually had a lot of fun watching you die like 50 times over and over again after you kicked my ass in like 10 different levels.
Sadist.
But you did. You're a criminal. You just cheated. You cheated every single time.
Let's go back. Let's talk about that cheating a little bit. Okay, when we're talking about cheating, we're talking about power-ups. Okay, some of these power-ups you collect, there are some different things that you collect. One of the levels had four different color-coded keys that are used to open doors.
Oh, no. Don't tell me you're just going to whine about that again.
Yes, at one level, I collected all four keys. And at the last door... Guess who's waiting just right outside the door? Sai. So when I'm slowly turning to open, she runs past to the finish and gains the glory of winning. Yes. So anyway, the power-ups themselves, they're scattered around the level, and they totally can screw a person up. Sai, she liked to flip the world upside down, reverse the controls, which felt like playing VVVV with your left hand backwards in the mirror.
Mouse and a keyboard.
Drunk. yes. And then one power-up zoomed in things very tightly. So leaps of faith.
You're such a whiner. But the
thing
is that...
Okay, I'm done whining. But the power-ups, they're so powerful. I just had to wait it out because I couldn't do anything. Otherwise, I would die. And I knew you got a kick out of watching me die.
I took screenshots of that. Anyways, the thing is that this is obviously one of the best parts of the whole experience, because playing by yourself, it's not as fun as, you know, racing with other people in the game.
But
I'll recommend it for that part.
Never as fun.
I'm just going to be a cheater like Robert.
Yes. So one of the things I want to talk about, we neglected to talk about some of the mechanics themselves. So yeah, you can play solo. Not very fun. We both agree on that. And crashing against the clock, it lacks something. Level design, it has its ups and downs. But when you have two players that you compete directly, each one taking the role of one of the brothers, either the red or blue, but you can, you know, adjust.
Exactly. One being a cheater and the other one, you know.
Yes, Blue Brothers. but for me, I thought that the mechanics were very similar to Sonic the Hedgehog. They had some things like some of these launchers that would catapult your character through the air, some of the crumbling ledges. They had spikes all over the place in some zones. The one thing that they borrowed a little bit was from N+, Ninja Plus, their arsenal. You can ninja jump between walls. You can slowly slide down a vertical barrier. Some of those elements, which also were replicated somewhat in Super Meat Boy.
Interesting.
I got killed with the interest. You played the Super Meat Boy, haven't you?
I haven't.
Oh,
wow. Dun, dun, dun.
This podcast. Crank the fray. Turn on
Don't
Super
Meat Boy.
Fire
me, please. But yes, I can't believe you got me admitting that.
Nothing wrong with the fray. But... And you know what else there's nothing wrong with?
Oh, my God. Is it time now? Is it time? Can I talk about it?
That's my fist. Fist punch your time.
What the hell was that? You're supposed to do the screaming at the beginning.
The screaming?
Didn't you play? There's a screaming in
this one. Cinematic of a woman giving birth.
Yeah, you should go for it. Anyways, we're talking about Fist Puncher. Fist Puncher is a fucking amazing brawler, like in the best of what it would be, Double Dragon in Streets of Rage today. Mm-hmm. This game brings a lot of RPG elements to the table. It's quite refreshing to, you know, be able to customize all your abilities as well, you know, buying perks while you're leveling. Mm-hmm. The game concept of the game, or the story of the game, it's about you need to kick ass to a bunch of bad guys trying to take over the streets of San Cruces in California. They apparently kidnapped a bunch of... Go to hell. They apparently kidnapped a bunch of pixely pretty girls, and it's your job to rescue them. The head honcho crime lord here is called Milkman, and he and his fancy mustache can both fuck off and die. Every single time you die, he's got this stupid, mean thing to say. It's very frustrating, but, you know, eventually you just grow to hate him. Mm-hmm. At first, you get the option.
It's like Perez Hilton.
Did you just out yourself saying that you read that?
I know
okay,
who he
let's
is.
Just, let's
I live
just
in
move
LA.
On.
I know let's who he just... is. He's a millionaire.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, to backtrack now. Let's just ignore that happened. Oh, so at first, you get the option to play as Dr. Carter. You also have Stuart Jackson.
Wait,
you
have who?
Go to hell. Beekeeper and Hella Pistrell. These are the main guys. Eventually, of course, you get to unlock different characters, such as Officer O'Grady. He's mm-hmm. got this stupid taser, which I hate. You got Kid Justice. He's got a slingshot. You got the Capitan, which has got wrestling moves and whatnot. And anyways, it's a total of 15 awesome characters, which every single one of them have individual moves and whatnot. And if you were lucky, you get to play as Robot Unicorn, but I think nowadays they do have a DLC for this as well.
Huh?
Yes, they do. I think they launched it. Yes.
How much is the Unicorn?
I have no idea, but I know it's available. So anyways, I'm a freaking unicorn, and I'm kicking everyone's ass. It's just impossible to explain how wonderful
this
is.
Title screen change to Hoof Puncher?
You know what?
What?
Stop trolling.
I know, go
I
ahead.
Love this game. Okay. Anyways, the game itself has got 1,000 of unlockable items, Easter eggs, collectible items, achievements, all these wonderful things. It's, I'm personally an achievement junkie, so all of this just gives me a lot of extra playtime, which I absolutely adore. There's about 50 levels, if I remember correctly, in which you get to explore from nude beaches to Nazi birthdays and stripper nuns, mm-hmm. fighting zombies, cats, crazy people, and all kind of...
So it's basically you're in L.A., not Las Cruces.
Yes, it's in California, of course, but it's a really great game, and I absolutely, you know, just recommend it. The only thing that could make this a much better experience is just to be able to play it real time, mm-hmm. you know, in order to be able to kick your ass.
Couch co-op.
Or the freaking cheating you did on Rush Bros. That will be the only.
Okay. Well, can I admit that when you started singing the praises of Fist Puncher, I wasn't all that excited? Can I admit that?
I'm
I guess not. I'm in hell already.
Right now.
So let me talk about that.
How dare you?
So one of the things is that previews, they showed Beat 'em Up, and it was rendered in these deliberately pixelated graphics and then tied together with this narrative that poked fun.
For design, by the way, because...
Poked fun at video game cliches. And yes. I played this a few times. Ass Kickers, we did a review from the creator of that. Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And even Double Dragon Neon kind of poked fun at some of the some of the rusty elements of the brawler. But this one turned out, Fist Puncher, turned out to be a little bit like these games, but it comes together in a really nice way. And one of the things that I liked about it is how smooth it feels. It was running at 60 frames per second on my rig, which is, you know, admittingly kind of modest. Punches, kicks, grabs, they're executed with a velocity that's pretty rare for the genre. There's not these slow, drawn-out animations. They're really quick, really
just
lively.
Just say it. It's awesome.
Because, yes, Face Puncher, my favorite game. No, early on, I found myself being able to handle myself in the middle of a crowd of foes, which is usually the kiss of death in beat 'em ups. Usually you try to, you know, kind of work your way around people. And one thing that I thought elevates Fist Puncher along other games is what you mentioned, the light role-playing element, and you gain experience by defeating mm-hmm. enemies. And that really kind of hooked me in. And as you
it
continue...
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, you can augment the arsenal of the different playable characters. How many are there altogether? Like 15?
15 about, yes.
15? Okay. I was Karate Doctor, but Beekeeper was tempting.
I was the unicorn.
Yes, we know.
Yay.
You're Hoof Puncher. And you earn special moves. For me, I really like the one where you you trade your special move gauge for health, which is really cool. The other thing I like about the game, and you're just going to lose it right now, is that it doesn't ignore. In fact, the opening screen implores you to use a controller. So it doesn't ignore modern
sense. Stop the hate. Leave me alone.
Okay. Off.
Keep her forever.
We are leaving WASD Island onto greener pasture. So one of the things you can do is you can execute an evasive roll with a press of the right stick, which really feels good within a brawler. So I like that. So yes, I ended up liking Fist Puncher.
Yay! Yes.
So let's fist punch on that.
Everybody.
Yes, you are. Okay. And you're overtaking my Twitter feed with Fist Puncher love.
Of course. I'm actually taking screenshots of everything. Oh my god, I was so obsessed with that game too. I think I tweeted 5,000 times per hour with that one, Atomic Gringo. And I need to finish that game by Megadev, which, by the way, it's an amazing game.
Let's see, social media people, if you aren't tweeting 5,000 tweets per hour, you are slack.
You get banned! No, you get banned. Remember that I actually ran out into a limit? That's amazing.
Good for you. Pushing Twitter to its limits.
I broke Twitter. Anyways, that's it for today, guys.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next time.
Bye.
All right, we're back. You guys ready for trivia?
We're ready.
Yay! We got super trivia this week.
Oh, ooh, super trivia. Is it 16-bit?
It's probably 8-bit.
I'm going to hold out for trivia 64.
This week
3D graphics.
All right, let's get started. Something a little different. Some claim that the game industry doesn't have the recognizable stars that Hollywood has. So for this week's trivia, you're going to disprove that theory by identifying the source of five contentious quotes from our own hot-headed, often egotistical luminaries. So I will say a quote, and you will match it to one of five developers, who include, ready, Richard Garriott, John Carmack, Phil Fish, David Jaffe, or Cliffy B. You guys got it? Garriott, Carmack, Fish, Jaffe, or Cliffy B.
Garriott, Carmack, Fish. I got to write these down.
I'm not going to write
I'll
this.
Say them again. You're not going to do this. All right.
No, I said I'm not going to be able to. Fucking names, man.
All right. Number one. Hey, Kotaku, I know you read this, so you got to give me an answer. When is the whole this is your sentence structure that you guys seem obsessed with these days? As in, here are your XBLA top 10 retro games, or here is your daily dose of publisher hyperbola, or here are your monthly NPD numbers. Here is your chance to knock it the fuck off because it drives me up the fucking wall. Who said that? Garriott, Carmack, Fish, Jaffe, or Cliffy?
I think I'll do pretty good at this, so I don't know if I should go last or what.
Fishy? But... What was one of the names? Fishy?
Fishy. Vote for Fishy.
So, okay, we got a Fishy.
Whose names am I mixing up? Cliffy and who's the one that starts with an F?
Fish.
Cliff Blazinski, Phil Fish, Richard Garriott, John.
Oh, okay, yeah, Fishy
David
one.
Jaffe.
The fishy one.
Okay. Jeremy?
It's definitely David Jaffe. I mean, the way he's a little bit obsessed with Kotaku, and he likes to curse, and he likes to obsess about stuff like sentence structure, just for the hell of it.
You are correct. You know your Jaffe.
I do. I do know my Jaffe.
Calling all Jeremy's. Number two.
You know what? That was the first game I got for my PS3.
Me too. No. Number two, if you're not a rebel by 21, you've got no heart. And if you haven't gone establishment by 30, you've got no brain. Garriott, Carmack, Fish, Fishy, Jaffe, or Swifty B.
Did we lose everybody else? Actually,
yes. Just you and me, Jeremy.
As I'll do it. I'll make
you
it
didn't,
happen.
No, you didn't lose me. I mean.
You just don't give a fuck.
Nope, there goes.
No, I don't. God damn it. I don't not give a fuck, but I know that that quote comes from someone else originally. So really, this is like a trick question, because what you're really asking is who repeated this quote, because they're not the originator of that statement.
Who's the original?
I can't remember, but I want to say that it's, I don't know.
Don Matrick. No, probably not Don Matrick.
Who doesn't know about the internet connection in...
It was originated by Francois Goussot.
Jeremy, what's your answer?
I'm going to say that sounds like Cliff Bleszinski to me.
Would now be a bad time to repeat the choices?
If you're not a rebel by 21, you've got no heart. And if you haven't gone establishment by 30, you've got no brain.
That does kind of have a Cliffy B ring to it.
All right, correct answer. Cliffy B.
Yeah.
But I think I should get bonus points for knowing that it was originally a French statement from back in the day.
You know, who's the guy
who... Fondue.
Yeah, Fondue.
Number three. Yeah. People tell me they're going to pirate my game because they don't like me. Gamers are the worst fucking people. Gary,
that has like a Jonathan Blow ring to it.
Jesus.
Daffy. Yeah. Cliffy B. Okay, Jonathan Blow's not on there.
What should be. John is quotable.
That does sound like David Jaffe. That sounds like something he'd say.
Sage?
I'll jump on the Jaffe bandwagon because I don't fucking know any of these. Yeah.
Jaffe mania is running wild, brother.
It's Phil Fish.
Jeremy?
Phil Fish.
Correct answer. Fishy.
Ah, crap.
Damn it.
Hey, number people four. Are going to pirate my fucking game. Gamers are the worst fucking people.
All right.
That was my Joe Pesci.
Oh, okay.
Pesci.
Joe Pesci being fish. Fishy?
Pesci means fish. It's a... Never mind.
Yeah, but... yes.
Number four.
I'm going to take a baseball bat to you.
Number four. So fucking sick of artsy fartsy in this industry. Get fucking over yourselves, bitches.
God damn.
Now, is the person who said that quote on this podcast right now?
It is Sage.
Yeah.
You know what? I would never say sick of artsy fartsy in the industry, okay?
Garriott, Carmack, Fish, Jaffe, B.
The Jaffe one, because it sounds like the first one that was the Jaffe one.
Okay.
Yeah, it does sound like Dave Jaffe. It's not. Is it just one for each answer, or do you have multiple?
No, there could be multiple.
All right, I'll have to go with Sage on that and say Jaffe.
Yeah, you guys are right. I'll go with Jaffe.
Jaffe's so fucking quotable.
Yeah.
Number five, story in a game is like story in a porn movie. It's expected to be there, but it's not that important.
Oh, I remember hearing that. I don't know who said it, but I remember hearing it. It made me sad.
I think I'll go with Cliffy again.
It sounds a little bit Cliffy, but I'm going to go with John Carmack.
Correct answer, John Carmack.
Yep.
Wow, I think Jeremy's got them all.
I am kind of plugged in.
You are. Number six. I've met virtually no one in our industry who I think is close to as good as a game designer as I am. I'm not saying that because I think I'm so brilliant. What I'm saying is I think most game designers really just suck, and I think there's a reason why.
Wow.
Who said that? Yes, egos. Richard Garriott, Carmack, Fish, Jaffe, Fishy, or Cliffy B?
What? I don't think that would be a Richard Garriott quote.
It's a Richard Gere quote.
Richard Gere.
I think it's Richard Garriott.
Does that sound...
Well, it sounds pretentious.
Well, yeah.
All these guys are pretentious.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll go with Phil Fishy, Fishy, Japanese game suck guy.
Fishy, 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 Fishy.
No,
oh my god, that was one of my favorite skits from Sesame Street.
And I think I do it. Same here. Well, I actually practice saying that. It is, Sage is right, it's Richard Garriott.
Yes.
Damn it.
Jeremy, you finally found your trivia niche.
I know. I need to start studying up.
Next week, all Madden all the fucking time.
Fuck.
Number 7. $9 is a fucking steal. I should be charging you $90, you fucking ingrates.
Jesus Christ.
God almighty.
So we got Garrett, Carmack, Fish, Jaffe, Cliffy B.
That's fucking
Jeremy,
awful.
I can feel it.
Okay, I bet that. I think that might be a David Jaffe quote, because I think there was... Didn't he release that $9 whatever that police...
Calling all cars.
Calling all cars.
Calling all cars, that's it. I think that's probably... That's my guess.
I'm going to go with the fishy, 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 fishy.
It is Phil Fish talking about Fez.
Jesus, Jeremy.
Jeremy, how do you know what? These things?
Talking about what game?
I make it my business to know. He's Fez. Talking about Fez.
Yeah, he was.
And he was having a little bit of a rough day that day, I think.
Jeremy, see, I do the trivia. Jeremy gets you in this mindset.
Yeah.
What was going on in his life that
day? I believe he had released Fez on Steam, and people were upset. What were they upset about this time? They were mad about something. I think they were mad that it was the same price.
No, they were mad that he only made it a dollar off.
Yeah, and they were going to torrent his game, and, you know, just to spite him, and, you know, I don't know.
Was he constipated that day?
There were some Cliffy B quotes that weren't even appropriate for the show.
Yeah, that's probably...
What?
Yeah.
He said some really...
He skirts into some kind of uncool territory sometimes. That's okay, though, I guess.
That, you know, wanting to defend your own gaming or whatever, I could understand, but that's the point where it's like, why would you go ahead out of your way to upset your entire market base? Like, why would you do that?
Oh, Phil Fish, he is an expert troll, too, so that's...
No, not the fish. The fish I can understand, and you said he was having a bad day, and that's fine. I just mean, in general, the idea that, like... You would say all gamers are garbage and fuck all of you. Well, then fuck you. Like, then why are you making video games?
Yeah, but they were already saying that. Like, he doesn't care. He's just stirring it up. He doesn't care.
I'm not defending him like you guys are friends. I think you should write him a letter.
Me and Phil Fish.
Like, I'm your biggest supporter.
Phil Fish, the new Microsoft.
No, actually,
awesome sideburns.
He does have awesome sideburns, and that's the thing. Like, he says now, like, oh man, everybody thinks they know me because I was in that documentary, and. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I totally know him now. No, but
is he an Elvis impersonator, or does he just look like one?
He looks a little bit. He looks like who's that singer?
The guy from Half-Life.
Gordon Freeman?
Yeah, a little
no, bit. He doesn't look like Gordon Freeman. He looks like who is the singer with the thick glasses?
Elton John?
Mm-mm, yeah, he looks like Elton John.
No, he doesn't.
No, it's someone else I'm thinking of, but I don't want to...
Glasses.
Charles Nelson Reilly?
No.
I'm trying to think of people with thick glasses.
No, and he usually...
Oh, wait. I know why you like him, Jeremy, because he's all about the ooh-yah.
He is definitely like an indie advocate.
Fiji?
As well.
Fishy.
He's actually French-Canadian. His name is actually not Fish. His name is like whatever the French for fish is. Fish. Le Fish.
Le Fish.
Philippe Le Fish. So he just apparently, yeah, something like that.
sounds like a French cat food company.
Oh man, no.
Wasn't it a character on Barney Miller?
What's a Barney Miller?
All right.
Yeah.
Never mind. Jeremy would know.
Yeah.
Okay,
I do.
Time for regular trivia. We'll see how the Lamar.
Oh, there's more.
There's more.
Ooh, I was basking in my victory.
Yes, you got three more. Number one this week. Best of PlayStation Network Volume 1 comes to retail spaces offering a collection of 4 downloadable titles. Name the game which isn't on the disc. A. Fat Princess. B. Sound Shapes. C. Tokyo Jungle. D. Flower. Or E. When Vikings Attack.
Fucking Deagle.
Crap.
Fat Princess. I don't know.
For some reason I want to say Fat Princess is on there. I know Tokyo Jungle is.
Jeremy knows this one, too. I just wrote...
I don't know that... I don't know.
Jeremy, what's the right answer?
When Vikings Attack.
That's kind of how I was leading, and I'm not saying that just to suck up because I think he's right.
Correct answer, Flower.
What?
No.
Wasn't that thing like $1.40 or $1.70-something a few days ago? Flower. I don't spot it.
How would but when Vikings attack get into that?
I don't know. You sound upset.
No, I'm just that's a
he's upset that he missed his first question of the night. You're kind of killing his vibe with the regular questions.
Wow. We'll take it out of the whole podcast. The
wide receiver has received an incomplete pass, and his game is forever fucksword for the night.
Number two. This week, PlayStation 3 owners will have access to Warship Gunner 2, Koei's 2006 PS2 naval battle game, named the perk players have access to after their first playthrough. A, futuristic weapons such as lasers. B, the English Royal Navy. C, a campaign that takes place in the Atlantic Theater. Or D, a cameo from Ling Tong of the Dynasty Warriors franchise.
Ooh. Well, I thought with a title like this, it would be a pair of in-game gunners. No?
It seems kind of odd that they have something British in a game that was probably... It was Tecmo Koei, was it? Yeah, was it Tecmo Koei the developer?
I can't answer that, Blue.
Yeah.
Wasn't it in the...
I think Koei was behind it.
I have no idea, so I say C.
Dynasty yeah. Warriors.
I'm gonna say lasers. Lasers and space stuff.
Pew pew lasers. Correct answer. Futuristic weapons such as lasers. Good job.
Ooh, firing them cannons. Pew.
Jeremy, you said Dynasty Warriors?
I did say Dynasty Warriors.
Oh, that's two.
I know.
Are you guys ready for some world exclusive trivia?
Oh boy.
We're talking about world exclusive trivia. All you guys better get this one.
Oh, boy.
It's the elimination round. All the following are new classes in Disgaea Dimension 2, A Brighter Darkness, except one.
Uh-oh.
Name it.
Jesus wept here.
Okay. A, sea angels. B, mecha prinnies. C, male angels. Or D, female versions of armor knights.
What?
What is the new class? Disgaea Dimension 2.
Male prinnies that are robots.
Females.
Robots sounds angels, awesome.
Mecha prinnies, male angels, or female versions of the armor knights.
Female versions of thingies.
Mecha prinnies.
I hate to say mecha prinnies, but because they sound so badass, but I don't recall ever hearing anything about mecha prinnies, and I know Silicon Era has mentioned something like prinnies playing soccer, so I'm sure they would have picked up on it at some point.
Sage was just eliminated from the podcast. Correct answer was Mecha Prinnies.
Oh, boom, boom, boom.
Hey, man, today was an important day for women's rights. I'm supporting the fucking women's rights here.
What is that?
Whatever, you're co-opting it for your trivia. No, Mecha Prinnies rights.
Mecha Prinnies rights do not supersede women's rights, right, man.
What about Mecha Godzilla rights?
Mecha
Godzilla is a hell of a lot
everything.
Bigger than all of us.
Mecha Godzilla supersedes all. He wins.
Yeah.
Yes!
So that's a podcast. Thanks for tuning in to tonight's show. Remember, if you like what you heard, you'll love what we write. Point your browser to www.techgaming.com for reviews, new release info, and plenty of engaging discussions. As well, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I am Robert, and you can find me at tech_gaming. Where can I find you, Jeremy?
I am at Jeremy_Lamont.
Or in the PlayStation aisle of his local GameStop.
That's true. And Blue, where can we find you?
And you can find me at Blue Swim. And if it says Sexual Bacon as the title, it's totally, it's still me.
It says what? Sexual Bacon?
Sexual Bacon. Well, I was having breakfast one day, and there was talk that Mark Henry...
Oh, no, stop right there.
There was talk that Mark
Henry...
Oh, no. I did not want to know this story.
There was the egg or the bacon, and you went for the bacon. Got it.
There was talk Mark Henry was going to retire later that day, and I thought, he was sexual chocolate, and I'm eating bacon. Hey, I should call myself Sexual Bacon. Sexual Bacon. It's
Sage,
good.
Can we find you on Twitter?
Why'd you have to specify on Twitter? I was going to say where you could find me in the world. You can find me on Twitter at Samarage.
In the world?
In Santa Fe, New Mexico. And in the end of July, you can find me in Seattle, where I hope to possibly visit PopCap Games.
Oh, cool.
Because why not?
Okay, Sector, start stalking now.
Actually, Sector, if you're out there, will you leave a post on the message boards? Because we were talking about...
Less.
We were talking about how we are hoping you're okay because we haven't heard from you in a while. So I hope you still listen to the show, and if you do, you should leave a little note in the notes and say hello.
Imagine when people start dying on the internet. Like, how will you know?
That terrifies me all the time. I have a lot of friends that, like, I don't want to find out through Facebook. Like, I don't want that to be how I know that they're dead.
I think I'm going to set up just, like, an automatic, like, post, like, that I have to renew myself, like, every 30 days. If I don't check in, it'll automatically post, like, this teary farewell on all social media. Like, I'm sorry, I died.
Like, you know how many people would die in that case?
Yeah,
like,
well, because
I'm not going to do this shit.
I mean, because that's the thing. Like, how would anyone ever know? And because, I mean, your spouse or whatever, they're not going to have access to all your passwords. Like, how are they going to tell all your friends? Like, oh, I'm sorry, Jeremy died.
Usually they post it as like a post on the page. You know what I mean?
Nobody's going to know. If you follow me on Twitter and I haven't posted in a while, I could be dead.
Oh dear,
that's really sad. I don't want to think about that. Let's not talk about that. On a lighter note,
that's a downer. Everyone have a good night. Thank you for listening to the tech.
Have a great night. We love you all. Thank you for giving a shit about the shit we do.
Don't die.
Don't die.
Live.
Come with me if you want to live.
Come with me if you want to live.
Blue totally wins.
Get to the chopper.
No, Blue still wins.